Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runners, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We're brought to you by Tough Man Triathlon Series. That's toughmantri.com. By VeloFix, the world's coolest mobile bike shop. By Polar, blood, sweat, and data. By Premium Plus Sports, that's premiumplus-sports.com. Best travel agency out there. By usa-swimrun.com. If you haven't tried a swim run event, grab a buddy and give one a try. By our Challenge Athletes Foundation. This last year, we sent out 2,806 grants, totaling $4.3 million. Keep challenged athletes in the game alive through sport. Check out any of our interviews on babbittville.com or on iTunes. And as always, endurance lives here. Our next guest, one of our favorite people on the planet. We go back lots and lots of years. He's the managing partner at Taylor, and he is also teaches PR and marketing at Rutgers University and Montclair State University. His new book, Decoding Gen Z, 101 Lessons Generation Z Will Teach Corporate America Marketers and Media. His name is Mark Beal. Mark, how the heck are you doing?
Bob, thanks for having me on. I love catching up with you and talking about what's happening in the world, what's trending, and this is always great. Thank you.
Well, what's always fun is here you are teaching at a college level, and at the same time you're teaching, you're learning. When did the whole idea of, you know what, these kids are different. There's something I need to write something about these kids.
Yeah, in 2013, Rutgers University asked if I would teach one 300-level public relations course. That one course has turned into several courses at the 300 and 400 level, as you said, at two universities in New Jersey. And as I was teaching the students about marketing and PR, I realized I was learning about trends as it relates to social media, their media consumption, what's trending in the marketplace, their thoughts and attitudes about internships and jobs. And so I started kind of documenting all this and was compiling it, and I realized there's a lot of things that people well beyond me, employers, the workforce, marketers, media, really need to understand, because this Generation Z, which is anyone who was born after 1995, so the oldest Gen Zers just graduated and joined the workforce, they're coming. And while the focus has been on millennials for the past 10, 15 years or so, we all need to start focusing on Generation Z, because they're going to be a powerful cohort over the next 15 to 20 years.
And when we look at Gen Z, it's funny, because we were just chatting about this for a little bit yesterday, and I have seen just in my grandniece and how involved in causes they are at a very young age. And back then, when I was a Gen Z person, when the earth was still cooling, I didn't think about anybody else but me. And it seems like these kids at a very young age are thinking about what they want their life to be great. They're not going to compromise on anything. What did you learn from all this?
I love how you said that. And what's interesting about you specifically, and I heard in the intro, you know, nearly 3,000 grants last year and well over $4 million in grants as part of Challenge Athletes Foundation. While you by age may not be Gen Z, you as a mindset, you, Bob Babbitt, are a Gen Zer at heart, because to your point, they believe that there's something much more of a higher purpose than just the job, just the paycheck, just reporting 9 to 5. They are, you know, socially conscious, purpose-driven, community-minded. And to your point, and I'm seeing this day in, day out, it's this, as you said, it's living life to the fullest. It's giving back. Yes, I have a job, and the job gives me a paycheck, and that is important. But my life is much more than that. My life is about community. It's about sharing a passion, whether that's triathlon or running or something completely different, with other like-minded folks. My life is about giving back, about a higher purpose. My job is what I do. My purpose is, you know, what I'm about and who I'm about and why I'm here on this earth. Just like when you started Challenged Athletes, you know, you were also, you know, a competitor selling magazines and doing all these other things, but Challenged Athletes became that higher purpose for you, and CAF was the higher purpose. And you'd be the first to say that if you never began with CAF many years ago, there would be a huge void in your life. But it's that purpose that's, you know, at the end of the day, you're going to look back and say, that's the thing I'm most proud of.
Oh, no question about it. We've raised over $100 million now and sent 23,000 grants. And, you know, you're changing lives every day. But I see that with the young, these 13 to 23-year-olds. We had a group from Cal Berkeley that came down to train a bunch of triathletes. And the next thing you know, one of the kids is doing a bike ride to raise $3,600 for CAF. It's they're thinking beyond the box. They're thinking totally different. How did you ID the kids that you interviewed for the book?
Well, once I had the inspiration for the book, and I was doing every morning, the first thing I did was I would just do research, simple research online. What surveys had come out, what studies had come out, what stories had come out about Gen Z around the world. And so that was kind of the foundation. And then I said, okay, well, I need to start interviewing them one-on-one, whether in person, by phone, by Skype. And I thought, you know, I'm not going to go to the youngest Gen Zers, because the youngest Gen Zers are entering first and second and third grade. But I think there's a sweet spot, those who are freshmen in high school through those who just graduated college. So from ages 13 to 23, from Connecticut to California, I interviewed Gen Zers across the nation. And I just thought that group of Gen Zers is in an interesting place. They're in high school, they're in college, or they just graduated college. So they are the ones who are, one, setting the trends. They are the ones who, to give you an example, you know, one of the lessons is Facebook has no future with Gen Z. They're the ones who are not going on Facebook. They're switching over to Snapchat or Instagram or even Twitter to some extent. And so I thought, let me get a good cross-section of these Gen Zers, a good cross-section of from a geography standpoint, from an age standpoint, from a life stage standpoint. And so I just wanted to make sure I had a good cross-section of men and women, teens and those who are in their 20s, those who just started work, and those who are, you know, preparing for the transition from college to a career, or those in high school. And so what was important to me was to really get that cross-section, because if I limited it just to either students I taught in New Jersey or just college students, well, that would be just one small sample. I really needed to go beyond that to get a real understanding of this this cohort.
And while you're interviewing these folks, they're tossing out terms that, and you've heard a lot of terms over the years, but you hadn't heard, you know, spill the tea, drop a pin, peep my tweet, salty, SOS goat, all this type of stuff, trill. Were you confused when people were talking to you and they're using terms you never heard before?
Yes. And I love that you talked about that, because it's, you know, after probably four or five interviews, I realized that I'm hearing these terms, and I realized they have their own Gen Z language. And so from then on, after I interviewed everyone, I had to make sure I said, oh, by the way, what are some terms you use that maybe your parents don't understand? And I remember there was a student from the University of Connecticut who said, I love talking in Gen Z language because my parents are looking at me confused and trying to, you know, interpret what I'm saying. And so there was this terminology and these this lexicon, and a lot of it is really born out of the social media channels that they really use. So again, they're heavy into Snapchat and Instagram and YouTube, to a lesser extent Twitter, and to a much lesser extent Facebook. They really think Facebook is just for guys like you and me, older people.
That's fascinating.
So there were those terms, which I really love how you rattled those off. You're fluent already in Gen Z, I can tell. But then they were throwing apps and tech at me, and so things like Forest and Telegram and Depop and Facetune, and I'm like, okay, we've got a whole bunch of apps and technology that, one, I'm not familiar with. So then I needed to really understand, what are you doing on technology? What are you doing with digital media? Why are you using these? And it goes back to even the point you raised earlier, is not only are they community-minded and purpose-driven, but they are so entrepreneurial-spirited. They are starting, as you said, causes or businesses in 9th, 10th grade, and the way they're doing it is using technology and apps that allows them to have basically a global business right from their fingertips, right from their phone. So it's something that, again, when I was younger, we weren't doing this. One, we didn't have the technology to do it, and our minds weren't thinking about that. We were thinking about, let's get a job. They're thinking about, let's start a business. Quick story for you. I was at the university the other day, at a diner at the university, meeting with another professor, and the line waiting to get in is right behind us. And I hear two students at the front of the line coming into this diner saying, "You know, so what are you going to do after you graduate? What are you going to do?" And they both we're talking about the businesses they're going to start, the companies they're going to start, the initiatives they're going to start. And I thought, wow, what a difference. What
a
difference.
Oh, my God,
yeah. Yeah, I had never heard that conversation before.
So how has this helped you as a marketer? At the end of the day, you run a PR marketing firm. You run Taylor. Learning this type of stuff, and when you're thinking about, okay, for my client, how are we going to reach people? How has this helped you identify how do you reach this group?
Well, I probably have heard more and more in the last several months, but even this week, as we're on the phone with clients, with brands, with organizations, and when we talk about, you know, again, even in the endurance world,
yes,
the Ironmans of the world, the New York Roadrunners of the world, the Rock and Roll Marathon.
Yeah.
They are brands, they are organizations, they are businesses, and this is that next cohort that they have to figure out, how do we engage them? How do we get them to participate? What makes us appealing to them? And I will tell you this. It's noted in the book, it was covered by many, and I love to hear from this. They are seeking experiences. They are seeking ways to go out there and join their friends, join others in experiences. So everything that you're involved in endurance sports world, is exactly the kinds of experiences they're looking for that are, away from the phone, away from the technology, but at the same time, they can document it, they can capture it, they can capture content and share, and what they say is, you know, those things are Instagrammable experiences that they are coveting, that they can share with their followers, that are unique, they are different, and they show this other side of their life that, you know, they're not staring at their phone all day, they're not sitting in their apartments all day, they're actually out there doing. And so endurance sports world is in a great spot for this cohort because they're seeking these experiences that are just not, everyday run-of-the-mill experiences.
Are you seeing, because we had obviously we are seeing a uptick in diabetes and childhood obesity and a lot of kids just sitting with their phones and playing PlayStation all day long. Do you see that with this group?
Yeah, they made a point. I have a chapter in the book where they talk about the fact that they are on social media a lot, that there is for lack of a better word, there's an image. There's this, many of the students mentioned to me, especially college students mentioned that, you know, they actually, you know, I don't want to say they're incentivized to be fit and to be active. Mm-hmm. But I think because, unlike, again, you and I, when we grew up, we weren't, you know, we didn't have these channels where we're, you know, our images were on social media. We had video. But I guess because they are on that all the time, and they're seeing themselves, they actually want to portray a fit image, a healthy image. And it's actually inspiring many of them to be active and be fit, which was very interesting. I heard that from a lot of them, where now maybe that's, you know, is that the right motivation? Maybe not, but you know what? It's there's nothing wrong with it. If that's the reason to go out and run, to go out and work out, to go out and cycle and swim, because I want to look fit and appear fit and be fit. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but it seems like social media might be, at least for this cohort, driving a lot of that to get out there and be active.
I love it when you're interviewing someone who's, you know, a college student and they say something like, "We will change the world." I mean, who does that? You think about that. I don't know if Steve Jobs said that for a lot of years. But when you hear that, that has to make you feel pretty confident that we're in a good place.
Yeah, it does. And it's funny you say that because that was the last lesson I concluded the book with because I thought it was a powerful, powerful statement. And in particular, there were two students, one a high school student, a high school freshman. And I thought this was so powerful that I put it on the back cover of the book. But he says, you know, "We are openly discussing a variety of issues and creating a Gen Z movement. I participated in my first march this year, and it was loud, empowering, and full of energy, and I can't wait to do it again." And then there was another student from the University of Delaware who said, "You know, our generation takes the initiative to get involved with issues, whether they're local or national issues." She goes, "Just at my university alone, we developed a club to shed light on issues such as mental health." And she said, "By being proactive participants, we're making an impact at the local level. It's a cause I feel passionate about, that I want to lend my voice to. It's part of our generation being heard for sure, and we will change the world." So you're right, there's this other, whether you want to call it purpose, community, socially conscious, there's this other dimension to Gen Zers that is refreshing, and it's great to hear and great to see. And the other piece to it, which, again, it's logical, but it's that phone in their hand that's allowing them to build these communities and unite these communities and do something that I always say is powerful, is, you know, creating movements. So whether it's creating movements around a cause, creating movements and getting everyone together someplace to protest something that they feel is not right, it's powerful the way they're doing it, and they're doing it all through technology and social media and digital media.
Well, we've lived through the change, right? You're talking about in the 80s when you're doing the promotion, or 80s, 90s, for Iron Man, for Danskin, for NASCAR, for all the different major brands that you've been involved with. You're doing all that, but it all started with, okay, we want to reach out to the major magazines, we want to reach out to television. Nowadays, when you're confronting a budget and how to reach people, how do you reach people?
A great question, and you're right. The mix, the marketing mix, the media mix has changed. So now when we're developing campaigns for any brand, to your point, it could be a consumer brand, mm-hmm. it could be a lifestyle brand, it could be an endurance brand. You've now got to look at it as a more of a model mix, which, to your point, yeah, advertising might be able to do a little bit of that. Earned media, editorial coverage might be able to do a little bit of that, but you've also got to look at this dimension of social media influencers, content, because especially with this generation does not read a newspaper. This generation does not watch the 6 o'clock news. This generation does listen to things, and specifically they listen to podcasts mm-hmm. like yours as opposed to the local radio station.
Right.
So as we develop marketing plans, you've got to engage them where they are consuming media, and in many cases, again, it's through content and it's through even social media influencers. So influencers who they follow, who they respect, who they admire, and whose content they will potentially share if they feel it's compelling enough to share with their followers.
At the same time, you know, you get media, you get the influencers, and it doesn't take much for them to lose their way. You know, when something doesn't look authentic, and you know, it doesn't pass the smell test, when you say, okay, they're just promoting something here, people can lose that influencer status very, very quickly.
Absolutely. This whole world of social media influencers right now is very, very interesting, because a lot of influencers 4, 5, 6 years ago were folks who might have been writing a blog about a specific topic. It could have been about endurance sports.
Right.
It could have been about running or fitness. And then all of a sudden, that small blog became something bigger. Now they had some followers on their social media channels. And what started as a hobby may now be a full-time job, where they even have agents now. Many of these influencers have agents. But to your point, they still have to stay authentic to what it was that inspired them to start this at the beginning. And so we just had a great discussion about this in class the other night, is you need to, if you're a marketer, you need to align with influencers who are authentic to your brand, who are authentic to whatever message you're delivering. And so you can't, you know, have an influencer. It's kind of like the old, you know, can't put a square peg into a round hole. It really has to be authentic, and it has to come off as authentic, as opposed to just, I am shilling for this brand. I am being paid, so I'm saying this, but this has nothing to do with really the content that they put out there on a regular basis. So, yeah, it's very, very interesting, and it takes a lot of research and review of the content that an influencer has posted over the last year or two or three to really try to ensure that what they believe in, what they stand for, what they post is aligned with your brand.
So, Mark, you've, over the years, one of the things that I've told people forever, you're one of the most creative guys in the industry, probably the best PR person I've ever worked with. And so if you look back at a campaign that you created years ago that was successful, would that same campaign work today? How would you have to adapt that campaign to today's world?
Well, you know, I think back to a campaign that you were involved with me back in 2008, which was one that I still talk to my students about. But prior to the Olympics in 2008, you know, for Kleenex, we went out and turned their 30-second commercial, which was called Let It Out, into a 45-minute film, Let It Out, the movie. And we worked with folks that you and I know very well, Lisa Lacks and Nancy Stern, and we crisscrossed America. And we shot a lot of content
yep.
about what do the Olympics mean to you. You actually sat on the blue couch out in California there.
I loved it, yeah.
And in those days, that program was a successful one. It garnered lots and lots of media attention. The Today Show featured it several times. Media across the country featured it. But that was 2008. We're now in 2018. So to your point, you would have to now take that campaign you would probably take a lot of the content and turn that 45-minute film into maybe 45-second bites and distribute the content through a number of channels. You might align and rally a number of influencers that make sense in the Olympic space or the fitness space or the running space or even the documentary film space and have them somehow support and amplify the message. So I think some of those programs that you and I have worked on for years, at the core of those programs was this idea of compelling storytelling, and that will never change. It's just the channels in which perhaps we're distributing it have changed or we're adding to those channels. But if the key is, and you've done it better than anybody, it's compelling storytelling, compelling stories, human interest stories, just like the CAF athletes and grant recipients, that's never going to change. That's not going to change 50 years from now. It's just the way in which we're communicating those stories.
You know, it's, what I find interesting, too, is I think the era is, it's harder to be a marketer, right? There's so many options out there. But at the same time, you know, we've both been through it. There are a lot of guys who are like, okay, we'll do an ad buy with Sports Illustrated. Done. It was simple. And you didn't have to be very creative, and it was no risk-taking. Nowadays, I think you have to be better. You have to be better than the other guy, which really points towards companies like you and Taylor, because you've done the creative stuff when someone comes in and goes, here's my budget, and it's really not up to snuff to what you need, but you get creative and do things that allow the client to still be successful.
I think that's the greatest challenge today and the reason why I love to continue to market. You're absolutely right. The marketplace is more crowded than ever. There's more messages being delivered than ever. So if you can get creative and come up with that, again, compelling campaign, that compelling content, and it breaks through to where consumers, individuals are sharing it and say, did you see this from this brand?
Right.
Did you hear about this? This is great. And that's how I, even when I talk to my students, I say, that's something that's breaking through. If we all are hearing about it or seeing it on our feeds or sharing it on our feeds, that's a campaign that has actually broken through because we are now advocating for that brand. They didn't pay us a dollar to advocate for them, but we think the content is so newsworthy, compelling, interesting, informative that we've taken on our own to share it on our Twitter channel or Facebook or Instagram, and we're now advocating for that, even though, again, we are not a hired influencer or a spokesperson.
So in the back in the day, the holy grail was let's get a morning show, right? We got our person, our spokesperson on the morning show, and that was it, right? Now it's, okay, you got the morning show, you've got the nightly news. There's obviously big hits out there, and it's those same shows aren't just on television. People are watching on mobile. Are the Gen Zers watching that content on their phones or just not watching that content at all?
Yes and no. So it's interesting you bring that up. So for the average Gen Zer, they don't even know that a Good Morning America exists.
Isn't that funny?
Meaning they're not tuning in like you and I might.
Right.
They're not even tuning in. And it's interesting, even with the Kimmels and the Fallons, the late night, they may not even be watching that in real time, but that content they are watching on their phones the next morning as they're taking the bus, you know, on campus or they're commuting to their first job out of college. So a lot of that content is still getting to them through their phones, through platforms like the Daily Skim, which is, you know, news highlights every morning, which, again, gives them the headlines, and if they feel the headlines compelling enough, they'll click the story and they'll read it. So they're still getting some of that content. They're just not watching or consuming it in the traditional ways that you and I did, whether on TV or in the newspaper, in the magazine. But as they said, you've got a couple seconds to get my attention. So for Gen Zers, it's that headline or that image or the first 3 or 4 seconds of a video. If it doesn't grab them, they will move on to the next thing. If it grabs them, they will continue to consume and digest the information.
Since we're both so involved with endurance over the years, how do you think, I see the Gen Z folks that, like you said, they want experiences. They want adventures. I don't know if they're that much into, hey, I want to put a race number on and be like everybody else and go out at 5 a.m. and, you know, get in the water with 1,000 other people. I wonder if, can we reach those folks with our endurance message the same way we always have?
I think what they are, what I'm hearing and what I'm seeing, and I know you're seeing this as well, and you know this even better than I, they are looking for, again, those participatory events where they and their friends can join. So if we go back, your Muddy Buddy event, to me, will resonate even more with this generation now than perhaps something that's really hardcore, because they're looking to do it with a group.
Yep.
They're looking to, again, nothing wrong with it. They're looking to shoot some video while they're doing it, shoot some images
some
while
fun.
They're doing it.
Yep.
And then they're looking to go back after and you know, have a cold drink, a cold beer, and start to share that content with their friends and say, you know, we had the greatest day today at Muddy Buddy, and let me show you what it was all about. So I think those kind of platforms and events within the endurance space, the obstacle space, are the ones that this generation will gravitate to even more. Now, some of those individuals, yes, they may say, well, boy, I want even a bigger challenge, so I'm going to now attempt an Ironman or a marathon. But I think the events that you had created throughout the years, those are the ones that will be the entry point into endurance sports.
Is this also a good era for, since we know these kids are very cause conscious, to reach out to these kids, even though a lot of them at this point don't have dollars? But if you're a charitable platform, getting those kids connected to what you're talking about early, because eventually they will be.
Yes, I actually am in the process of helping what was called the Food Bank of Monmouth and Ocean County, which is right at the Jersey Shore. They've rebranded themselves Fulfill. And their challenge right now is, how do we engage a younger audience? Because to your point, a younger audience, 22, 23, 24, 25, they are our next wave of supporters and fundraisers and donors and all those things, and we need to. So you're absolutely right. I think causes, organizations, they need to figure out how do we engage these consumers? How do we engage Gen Z? Because, and even pro sports leagues and teams are looking at it, and they're saying, this is our future. These are our future spectators, our future fans. But we need to figure out how to engage them now, because we can't wait till they turn 30 or 40 or 50 and say, oh, let's engage them. We have to engage them now in some way. So I think everyone is noticing that and realizing they have to figure out a way. How do we at least engage them, gain their interest now, so that we can build some sort of a relationship over the next 10, 15, 20 years?
So when you look at the glossary, and I love the fact that you have a glossary in the book, which word or term stuck out for you? Which one was sort of, oh, I get that?
Well, it was interesting. So a quick story in the glossary. I mentioned, I had the first few interviews with Gen Zers, and I was hearing these terms, and I said, this is really interesting. So, of course, I turned to my own Gen Zer, my youngest. My youngest is just graduated college in May, Summer Beal, and she joined the workforce, and she actually works for an agency in New York. And so after the first few interviews, I said, is this true? I'm hearing these terms. And so right away, you know, she says to me, you mean things like, you know, peep my tweet and drop a pin? And I'm like, yeah, those kind of terms. And so she became, we sat around one weekend during the summer after we'd been out paddleboarding and boating and doing all our fun stuff on the water. And so she and I sat down and started brainstorming. She goes, you know, here's some other terms. And then as I conducted the other interviews, they either reinforced that or gave me new ones. So she almost became my editor for this section, because before the book went to publication, I said, okay, you need to review these once again. One, are these all accurate? Are these legitimate? Are the definitions correct? I had a few where the definitions were, I interpreted them the wrong way. And she goes, Dad, this is not the right interpretation. Here's the correct definition. So there were some, like, you know, you and I, you know, we all know GOAT, you know, the greatest of all time. That was a surprise that Gen Zers brought up, because I said, well, that's the one term I do know. But the majority of these terms, I didn't know, wasn't aware of, but for them it's just a regular part of their lexicon that they're either speaking or tweeting or posting. And so to your point, I said, we've got to put this glossary in here. And like you, a lot of media have had so much fun with these terms, because they've either never heard of them, or they have maybe children who speak this Gen Z language, and so they've gotten to know it pretty well.
So with a number of the Gen, you've built like a Gen Z panel of some sort, and people, so if a corporation or an event series is saying, listen, we want to know more, we want somebody to come in and speak to us so that we can really figure out where we're going, that's something that you're working with your the people you interviewed on, right?
Yeah, so I have basically what I call a proprietary panel of Gen Zers across the nation, like I said, from Connecticut to California. So I can go anywhere, any state, if a brand, a company, an organization, an association, an event says, you know, we need to better understand these Gen Zers, I usually will bring in 2 to 4 Gen Zers with me. I will serve as kind of the moderator, but what's most important is what's coming out of the minds and the mouths of Gen Zers to these marketers, these promoters, these business owners, and so they can give them the scoop directly. They can be a focus group. They could be a test group. They can provide feedback on maybe concepts that a brand or an organization is working on, or they can provide new thoughts, new concepts based on, again, how they behave, how they act, how they consume social media. So it's been really, really interesting to do this and to have these Gen Zers give, again, brands, companies, organizations, and associations insight into how they should be marketing, how they should be staging events, hosting events, how they should be conducting their social media. And it's been a great way to bring to life. So a quick example, yeah. one of the lessons talks about that horse racing, of all things, is happening. And some folks from horse racing got wind of this. They saw it, and they reached out to me, and he said, wow, this is interesting. One, because, again, horse racing years ago was, you know, very popular, and maybe it's not quite as popular. But as we talked about earlier with events, participatory events, Gen Zers love the idea that the horse racing track is a unique location. We can get dressed up. We can go in groups of 5 or 10. We can take photos and video. And so horse racing came to me and said, you know, what do you suggest? And I said, here's what I suggest. Let's get some Gen Zers in a room, and let's do a session where they share with you the ways you can make horse racing even more exciting, more popular with this cohort as they reach ages 21, 22, 23, 24. So, yeah, there's been good reaction to this, what I call Z-Talks, which is what I can bring to companies and organizations.
Well, and you're involved with horse racing, right?
I'm involved. My wife and I have always loved horse racing, and so we're part of a group here in the East Coast that is probably about 30 strong, where every year we purchase a two-year-old with the hopes that maybe that two-year-old will make the Triple Crown. Usually doesn't, but this year has been a good year. We had a couple of really great horses, in particular a filly, a three-year-old filly by the name of Dixie Serenade, who made it all the way to a $1 million stakes race in the fall. And I guess one of the reasons I love horse racing is it goes back to my days as a runner, especially the idea of training and speed work. And when you read about horses and their trainers, I am fascinated by the workouts they go through, the speed, the times, all those things. So I think it's one of the reasons I probably love horse racing. My dad, who for years was a coach, he was the cross-country coach at West Point at the United States Military Academy. He was coach of the year in, I think, the early 70s at the college level, and he was the first one that brought me to a racetrack in eighth grade, and he used to bring his stopwatch that he used to time his runners with, and he'd carry that around his neck more for fun. People thought he had something to do with the horses, which he didn't, but he was the one that introduced it to me, and so to this day, I still love it.
So as a guy who has been a runner and a triathlete, and you've basically been an endurance athlete, how is how has that helped you business-wise?
Well, you know, in my first book, which I came out with 2 years ago, yeah, which was the 101 Lessons They Never Taught You in College, the very first chapter is Success is a Marathon, and I know we say that a lot, and we use that a lot, but the idea is that, and you know this better than anyone, is that it's not about the everyday, the wins and losses. It's about the consistent evolution, the consistent growth, the consistent, as you said, adapting to new things in the marketplace, new technologies, new media channels, all those kinds of things. So, like when I trained for the Boston Marathon, it was it wasn't really about, per se, that finish line. It was about the 3 or 4 or 5 months leading up to it, and it was just the day in, day out, playing with the training a little bit, tweaking some things here a little bit, going a little bit too far and maybe having a slight injury and figuring out how to cut back. And I think that all applies to business. It's, any one of us today can have a big win. That's great. But what about next week, next month, next year? So it's kind of that consistent approach to every day adds to this marathon that we call life and this marathon we call a career. And so I draw parallels from training, especially for long distance events, to what we do, not just in our careers, but like you, as entrepreneurs, what might be that next thing, that next inspiration that I might focus on and do something that others thought was impossible and make it possible.
Are you seeing, because I've been seeing this, every time you talk to a client, clients are realizing it is all about content. It's all about how do we create great content that connects our brand to that content and to that message, rather than, taking out an ad and things like that. They want something that's specific to them.
They want something, absolutely. And I think there's a fine line when it comes to, especially consumer brands. You know, a lot of consumer brands, as you know, are used to the 30-second commercial, the 60-second commercial with a brand that's prominent at the beginning, middle, and end. And with content, it's different. The consumer will consume your content and engage with it, but they don't want to engage with a commercial, per
right.
se.
Right, so exactly.
They're looking for something where there's a powerful message, where there is a something that is so compelling that they might even share it. But the brand needs to be there in a subtle way, in a way that, again, it doesn't turn into commercial. I was just sharing with my students 2 days ago. I teach a graduate students in sports business, graduate program at Rutgers, and I teach the students sports business, sports marketing course. And I shared with them a major life insurance company just did a partnership with five or six NFL rookies, but they're not an NFL sponsor. And they've created these mini documentaries, we'll call them, 2 to 3 minutes in length, things that you've been doing for years.
Right.
And it was interesting. I showed them to my students, and it was all about these NFL rookies who are already thinking about retirement and planning for retirement. And the brand only showed up once, and it was at the very end. And that's kind of the way it goes. You know, give them the compelling story, let them share the story, and let the brand get some credit for it, but don't have the brand blatantly throughout the entire piece of content.
Well, and that's essential, because I think people, especially you're talking about the Gen Z guys, they're going to tune that out in a second.
Yeah.
They'll go, oh, this is a sell. So, Mark, again, the book, Decoding Gen Z, 101 Lessons Generation Z Will Teach Corporate America Marketers and Media. I love it. We will change the world. That's like the best comment of all time.
Bob, thank you for taking time out to chat about it. And like I said, I think you're a testament to, you know, you're not by age, but by mindset. You are a Gen Zer because, of, again, you're community-minded, you're purpose-driven. Everything you've done throughout your career, you are a Gen Z at heart and in your mind.
I love it. And Amazon, best place to get the book?
Amazon is the best place, and since we all know where that is, I thought that would be the best place to have it.
I love it. Mark, as always, thank you so much for taking time. Always pleasure to catch up.
Thank you, Bob. I appreciate it very much.
Mark Beal has been our guest again. The book, Decoding Gen Z, you can get it at Amazon. 101 Lessons Generation Z Will Teach Corporate America Marketers and Media, from seriously one of the best marketers on the planet, Mr. Mark Beal. Again, we're brought to you by Tough Man Triathlon Series, VeloFix.com. Polar, blood, sweat, and data. Premium Plus Sports, that's premiumplus-sports.com. USA-swimrun.com. If you haven't tried a swim run event, grab a buddy and give one a try. Our Challenge Athletes Foundation, in our first 25 years, we've raised over $100 million, sent out 23,000 grants to keep challenge athletes in the game of life through sport. Check us out at challengedathletes.org. And you can listen to any of our interviews at babbittville.com or on iTunes. And as always, endurance lives forever.